Hello, and welcome to So 5 Minutes Ago, the podcast where we get lost in the best 80s teen movies. See, we're your host, Kate.
And Shannon.
Welcome to episode 6. This week we are going to be talking about the 1987 horror comedy, The Lost Boys. I guess it's a comedy. Yeah. Okay, Shannon, what's your background with this movie going into it?
I can't really remember like my origin story, but I watch it every year. I have been for a while now, sometimes twice a year. It's sort of right on par with like The Labyrinth as one of those just creepy movies that sort of forms your opinion of like, I don't know, like monsters and everything.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's really nostalgic for me.
Do you watch it at Halloween or just like whenever?
I usually watch it at Halloween, but I have been known to also watch it in the summer. I don't discriminate.
Well, it's beachy. It's summery.
Yeah.
I would say it's a summer movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd only seen this movie once before, I think, watching it for this episode, but I remember it being pretty absurd. So I was excited to revisit it. And then it was actually so much better than I remembered.
Oh,
and
good.
I really enjoyed watching it again. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to discussing this movie with you.
Awesome.
But before we do, let's do some quick behind the scenes trivia facts. This movie is directed by Joel Schumacher, who, I mean, he has so many film credits. I was going to list his most popular ones, and I was like, oh, there's like so many. So
yeah.
Look him up. You'll be like, oh, I recognize his movies. And this whole movie was filmed in only 3 weeks, which is pretty impressive.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. Don't know how they did that.
I know. Given all the like locations and production, and not that it's like a real big budget thing, but there's a lot that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a lot of location changes.
Yeah. It was filmed on location in Santa Cruz. And so every year the Santa Cruz Boardwalk hosts an outdoor screening of this film, which I think is super fun.
Yeah. So cool. I tried to get up there 1 year for it, but it didn't work out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we should go.
I know. I know.
I've really been wanting to go to Santa Cruz. So after, you know, COVID ends, we should do that. This is the first two Coreys movie. So this is the first film that both Corey Haim and Corey Feldman did together, which is surprising. I thought they did another one before this.
Yeah,
but
I did too.
Yeah, they eventually appeared in 9 movies together, including License to Drive and Dream a Little Dream. Have you seen Dream a Little Dream?
I have not.
I need to see it. I tried watching it recently, but I wasn't in the mood for it. And I was just like, nope, I can't do this.
Is it sad?
No, it was just slow in the beginning. Mm. And then also my internet was messed up. So the sound was off and I couldn't get it synced up. And I was like, nope, I give up. So I'll try it again. Corey Feldman almost wasn't in this movie because he allegedly was fired the first day for showing up to set coming down from a Coke binge.
Wow.
I know, because he's still so young in this movie.
He's so young.
He was rehired the next day and promised to be more professional. My gosh. When you see him, he looks like a baby. It's just like,
he does.
My gosh, no.
I know.
Jim Carrey was considered for Kiefer Sutherland's role. And honestly, I would love to see that version.
Me too. Ace Ventura, Vampire Detective. Like,
yeah.
What would that have even been like? I think of the Jim Carrey from In Living Color. And I just, what the heck?
I mean, this has to be based on like the fact that he was in Once Bitten. But that was still kind of like a broad comedy, and this is so much more dramatic.
Yeah.
So it would have been really interesting to see if he could do dramatic acting that young.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll never know.
I know.
But just so everyone can keep track, if they're going to play this game at home, the name Michael is said over 100 times in 97 minutes. And the only reason I looked this up was because I love the way Kiefer Sutherland says Michael.
Uh-huh.
And he says it so often that I started to wonder, like, how many times does he say this name? So over 100 times, which is crazy.
Yeah. It's like 118 or something is the total.
Gosh.
It's also funny because sometimes when people yell it, it sounds like when Dwight is mad and he says, Michael! And that's all I could hear. Michael! But yeah, they say it a lot. I tried to look up how many times they say the word Jellicle in the movie or musical Cats the other day.
Oh my gosh.
And I couldn't find a solid answer. So if anybody knows that, please write and tell us, because it is so much. My friend and I tried to do a bet to see who could get closest, but I couldn't find it because it's a lot.
What was your guess?
My guess, I think, was it was like 184 or something. Somewhere around 180. It's so much. And if they say Michael 118 times in this movie, uh-huh. Now I'm thinking Jellicle's much higher, because there's a song where they're straight up like, a Jellicle cat is a this and a cat and a Jellicle. Like, they just say it over and over. So anyway, but this is not about cats. This is about the Lost Boys. So let's get into this movie. Okay. We open on a nighttime shot of a bustling beachside pier, and the actual filming location is the Santa Cruz Boardwalk. We immediately cut to a carousel where a group of four guys with the crispiest long hair you have ever seen are meandering through the carousel horses. This group of guys is led by David, played by Kiefer Sutherland, with a bleached mohawk mullet situation. Mm. A mohawk. He has a mohawk. The gang guys are Paul, Dwayne, and Marco, who is played by Alex Winter, a.k.a. Bill from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Okay, so all these guys' fashion choices are aggressive. It's like a little 80s metal and a little goth punk and a lot of hair and leather jackets, uh-huh. and jewelry and eyeliner and accessories.
Yes.
A lot. Yes. A lot.
But I feel like, according to vampire standards set by, like, I don't know, Anne Rice, this is par for the course with vampire style, because mm-hmm. it's just, instead of like Baroque velvets and brocades, it's like chains and leather and hairspray.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if vampires are just inherently like gaudy.
Yeah, I know. Is it that, or is it that because they have been around for so long, they just collect a lot of things? Like, if I lived for endless time, I think eventually I would dress like such a weirdo. Because what are you going to wear? Like, jeans? No. Like, you're going to be like, oh, I can get away with anything. I'm going to wear a freaking leather duster and like...
And just keep layering and layering.
Yeah. So anyway, Kiefer starts putting his hands all over some girl's face in the on the carousel until her boyfriend tries to pick a fight with him, and then security intervenes and kicks them off the boardwalk. These guys are real troublemakers. Next, we see a lone security guard walking to his car through an empty parking lot. He looks over his shoulder terrified, and an airborne swooping camera shot conveys that something flies down, picks him up, and takes him into the night. Presumably to show him love like he's never seen. Never seen.
Okay, first of all, Benny Mardones probably is a vampire by the look of his album cover photo, if you've ever seen that.
Terrifying looking.
Yeah. Yeah. Just pale and monster looking. But secondly, I love the choice to never show the vampires actually flying, because the point of view and the characters' reactions to what they see in the sky is so much more terrifying than some, like, be-mulleted hotties on guy wires.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I love that they decided to, like, never show them in the air.
Yeah, and it also kind of, like, builds the tension, because mm-hmm. you're just like, what could this be? Instead of, yeah, seeing Kiefer, like, on wires, like, swooping down. Okay, so next we see a daytime shot of a seaside town. It's Santa Cruz again, or in this case, Santa Carla. A mom named Lucy, played by Diane West, who was also Ariel's mom from Footloose.
And the DA from Law & Order.
Yes. Is with her two sons. Sam is played by Corey Haim, and Michael is played by Jason Patrick. And Sam is about 14 years old, and Michael is like 18 going on 27.
Yeah.
Per usual.
He's one of the younger teen men mm-hmm. we've seen, though, so.
Definitely. Yeah. They drive by a Santa Clara billboard, on the back of which is spray painted "Murder Capital of the World." Okay, in real life, Santa Cruz was once known as the murder capital of the world, because in the 70s, it experienced 28 murders within a 30-month period.
Wow.
Committed by three serial killers, one of which was Ed Kemper. So,
why do they like it up there so much?
And nice weather. I have
easy
no idea. Yeah. Okay, so we get various shots of beach life and boardwalk rides interspersed with missing children posters and local town, quote, weirdos, including punks and goths and hippies and some girl licking a rat.
This footage seems more real to me than most, though, like establishing shots that are in movies. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, could this be actual B-roll that was shot in Santa Cruz? Because some of it looks like extras for sure. but some stuff seems spontaneous. Like there's this one car that drives by where there's like teens hanging out playing to the camera.
Yeah, they're like yelling at the camera. Yeah, yeah, I think it's a combination of both, because they posted, the production crew like posted, what's it called? Like calls for extras for this part. And a bunch of people, like local extras, responded. So I think it is kind of a mix of both. Okay, so the family pulls up to a large cedar shake style house. I was wondering if I could get through that with my Invisalign trays in. Okay. With a bunch of stuff around the yard, like wind chimes and antlers and piles of wood and statues and stuff. And an older man is lying on the porch. It's Lucy's dad, who's playing dead for some reason because he's quirky grandpa. Yeah. They go inside where the interior of the house is like some half lodge, half mountain souvenir store vibes with Navajo blankets and taxidermied animals everywhere. Mm-hmm. Sam is complaining that there's no TV. His big brother, Michael, immediately starts lifting weights, all Brad from Goonies style. At first, I thought they were just vacationing there, and I was like, oh, of course Michael would bring weights, because that's what you bring on vacation, and I realized they were moving there, so okay. So we learned that the family has moved there from Phoenix after a divorce. The boys are running through the house when they open a door into a taxidermy room, and this room is so extra. There's like animal corpses and skins and bones hanging from the ceiling and piled on a table, and it's all lit with like harsh neon pink light. But like, how did they not smell this room from outside?
Mm-hmm. I know. And I always think about that too, because my dad has dabbled in taxidermy, and not only do the chemicals and the bleach have like an overwhelming smell, but rotting animal flesh can definitely not be contained by just closing the door on it.
Yeah. And so, I would think this is the kind of thing you would have like in a shed in outside a shed, or in a garage. Yard,
exactly.
Yeah. And this is just like in the study off the living room.
Yeah. Right by the kitchen.
Uh-huh. All right. So Grandpa starts giving the boys the rules of the house when this comes up.
Hey, Grandpa, is it true that Santa Carla is the murder capital of the world?
Some bad elements around here.
Wait a second, let me get this straight. Are you telling me that we moved to the murder capital of the world? Are you serious, Grandpa?
Well, now let me put it this way. If all the corpses buried around here was to stand up all at once, we'd have one hell of a population problem.
Ooh, spooky! This is also where we see Corey Haim's acting method of choice, which is just like being sweaty and letting his mouth hang open when he's not speaking. Mm-hmm. He does it a lot. Oh, holy moly. And now we are back at the boardwalk where a crowd is gathered at a nighttime concert. And not just any concert, but a concert featuring Timmy Capello, affectionately known as Sexy Sax Man.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Very obviously, you need to check out our visuals on Instagram at So5MinutesAgoPod. But in the meantime, I will do my best to capture the majesty of this magnificent creature with the limited power of words. Okay, so imagine a man, but make him a tan man, like a tan, shirtless, oily man with muscles, like the top half of a centaur. He has long, wavy hair, but the top half is slicked down to his head and gathered up in a half pony. And then around his neck and his wrist are lots of chains. Not like jewelry chains, but like full-sized metal chains you would use to lock up a bike, like chunky chains. On his bottom half, like where a horse should be, are muscular men's legs covered in pink and purple swirl patterned leggings. His waist and loins are girded with a leather codpiece and a bondage belt complete with like studs and chains. In his hand, a saxophone. When he plays, his body responds in kind with lots of aggressive crotch thrusting while children in the audience look on in awe.
Oh my gosh.
He like glistens in the light of the flaming barrel beside him. He is resplendent.
Yeah. And they linger on him for so long, and it's so worth it.
Imagine if you were at the boardwalk and you were like, oh, a concert is going on. And then you walked by and saw this, you'd be like, wow. Yeah.
You would not leave. You would never leave.
No, you'd be enraptured by this man. So yeah, while Sam and Michael are watching this absolute masterpiece of a man, a curly-haired vixen in a bustier dances her way through the crowd and steals Michael's attention away from sexy sax man, although I don't know how. Out on the boardwalk, Mom Lucy is walking around when she sees a woman posting a missing person poster with a picture of the security guard from the beginning of the movie. And then she sees a help wanted sign outside a video store. So when she walks into the video store, it's at the same time that the four gang guys from the carousel walk in. The store manager, whose name is Max, tells them to scram and they take off on their motorbikes into the night. Those rapscallions! Lucy says these youths are not so bad. And she also tells the manager that she needs a job. So Sam and Michael are following curly-haired girl through the crowd. Sam in his ridiculous Southwest duster with shoulder pads.
Oh, what is he doing?
Peel off into a comic book store. A couple of shop boys are eyeing him down, and they have this exchange.
Got a problem, guys?
Just scope in your civilian wardrobe.
Pretty cool, huh?
For a fashion victim.
And they're not wrong because his outfit is so dumb. It's a lot of his clothes in this movie, some of them I like and some of them are just like, it's almost like they were, this predates Zach Morris, but it's like they were going for like a Zach Morris vibe, but kind of hit like or missed the mark
because
it overshoots.
It's very costumey. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So one of these boys is Edgar and is also Corey Feldman. Thank goodness the Coreys together at last. The other is Alan, and together they are the Frog Brothers. Oh my gosh. Also, Corey Feldman's voice is disturbingly deep for how baby-faced he still is in this movie. It's really incongruous. Like, every time he talks, it looks like they overdubbed him with a grown man's voice.
Thank you. Yes. It's so affected. I hate it. It's,
yeah,
he's just like really pushing it down and it's like gravelly too. Oh, it's so annoying.
Yeah. It takes you out of every scene that he's in. Cause you're just like, wow. Then the boys have a very nerdly pissing contest in which Sam spits some badass comic book knowledge to prove that he belongs here after all. Edgar hands him a comic book called Vampires Everywhere and says he should read it because it could save his life. Outside, Michael watches curly-haired girl who is dressed straight up like Esmeralda from Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame jump on the back of Kiefer David's motorcycle, and they both smile at Michael before riding off.
Yeah, and at some point here, Michael and Sam are standing in front of like an old-timey sideshow mural or poster or billboard of a lady that says The Vanishing Girl. Foreshadowing.
Ooh. All right, so in a steamy car, like on a lookout, the girl and guy from the carousel at the start of the movie are necking when they hear something. The something that they hear is the sound of the roof of their car being ripped off and then them both being plucked up and carried off into the night while they scream.
Yeah.
The next day, we're back at Grandpa's seaside shanty. He opens the garage to reveal a beautiful 57 Ford. He and Sam get in, and Grandpa fires up the engine for about 10 seconds before shutting it off and getting out because, quote, that's as close to town as he likes to get. Grandpa jokes! Back at the comic book shop, Sam and his gaping open mouth are milling around while Corey Feldman and Alan stare at him. They hand him a copy of a comic called Destroy All Vampires and tell him what is up in Santa Clara.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you? Well, I'll tell you something. You don't know shit, buddy.
Yeah. You think we just work in a comic book store for our folks, huh?
Actually, I thought it was a bakery.
This is just our cover. We're dedicated to a higher purpose. We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Right.
Hey, man. Read this.
I told you, I don't like horror comics.
Think of it more as a survival manual. There's a number on the back. And pray you never need to call us.
I'll pray I never need to call you.
I do like that Sam meets their intense drama yeah. with sarcasm. He's just like, okay, I'll call you.
Yeah. Like, that truth, ooh. Justice in the American Way line is so Sylvester Stallone. I can't stand it.
I know. It totally, totally is. Okay, on the boardwalk, Michael buys a cool leather jacket and is approached by curly-haired girl who we learn is named Star. She is played by Jamie Gertz.
They also have this little banter where Michael says her parents must be ex-hippies like his mom, and then we find out that he was almost named Moonchild. And this seems like a good place to mention how much 80s teen culture hated hippie culture. Mm-hmm. Like, we saw a lot of it in Valley Girls, too. The 80s just really had, like, a flower child-sized chip on its shoulder about hippies. And we see the Frog Brothers' parents sort of, like, passed out perpetually in the comic book shop. And they're dressed to the nines in the most basic hippie garb. Like, if you were going to dress as a hippie for Halloween, this is what you'd wear.
Yeah, it's real costumey.
Yeah, like headbands, the whole thing. But anyway, when Jamie Gertz introduces herself as Star, Michael's like, oh man, your parents too, huh? So
yeah, whatever. I know. This must just be a whole backlash because in the 80s, people's parents were hippies. And so they were like, oh, stupid hippies. And especially because in the 80s, it's like preppy culture was really a thing, which I feel like is kind of opposite of hippie culture. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. That is a running theme in 80s movies. Okay. So as they're about to get on his motorcycle to go grab something to eat, they're encircled by the four gang guys and a child for some reason on their motoring cycles. Kiefer David calls Star over to him. And then he says this to Michael.
You know where Hudson's Bluff is overlooking the point?
You can't beat your bike.
You don't have to beat me, Michael. You just have to try and keep up.
And then off they go! Riding downstairs and across the sandy beach, which, okay, and I've never driven a motorcycle, but seems like it would be really difficult and dangerous to ride in loose sand on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a bunch of stunt drivers in wigs ride under the pier and through the woods. And then they approach a cliff with Michael on one bike riding alongside David and Star on the other. And David dares Michael to stop first, chicken race style, as they speed towards the cliff's edge. Michael does stop first, and then he jumps off his bike and punches David in the face. David asks Michael how far he's willing to go. Where they go is to their, like, clubhouse lair hangout. It appears to be an abandoned building or something that the gang has adorned with lots of drapey fabric and candles and wrought iron and pictures of Jim Morrison. It looks like the set of a Meatloaf music video.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And so we learned that this was once one of the best resorts in Santa Clara, but when the San Francisco earthquake hit, it was destroyed and it fell into disrepair. David says, Marco, food. And then Marco throws a pigeon at him. Like a pigeon just like comes out of nowhere. David offers Michael some weed as a quote appetizer.
Best marijuana euphemism ever. Mm-hmm. Also, this whole scene is so fraught with peer pressure. Here, Michael, smoke this. Here, Michael, eat this. Drink this, Michael, you baby.
It's so true. Back at Grandpa's seaside shanty, Sam is in bed reading a comic book, and his mom comes in to tuck him in, and he asks her to close the closet door, because monsters. Sam is a typical, like, his room is typical teen 80s regalia, including one of those giant oversized watches that's a clock, and a huge poster of Molly Ringwald, and a poster of what looks like Rob Lowe in a crop top. And then I found out that it's because Joel Schumacher had recently directed St. Elmo's Fire, which featured Rob Lowe, but also, like, find a less sexy picture of him for this teen's bedroom.
Oh, gosh.
He's, like, smoldering in his crop tank top. Grandpa comes in brandishing a taxidermied woodchuck, I think. Is that what it is?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. To, quote, dress up Sam's room, and he sets it on the nightstand. Sam is weirded out by it and throws it in a closet, but, like, it's so cute. I would love to have this in my house. I mean, he's baring his teeth, but he looks, like, soft.
Yeah, he's, like, standing cute. Up on his hind legs.
Yeah, you could make him little hats and whatnot. Okay, so back at Jim Morrison's lair of candles and tapestries, Marco has just walked in with takeout Chinese food for the guys. Okay. Now, they rode deep into the woods and then to a beach bluff to get to this abandoned resort. So did Marco ride all the way back out to pick up food and then balance this box on his motorcycle as he rode back? Because it's like a full cardboard box full of food. Did they have it delivered? If so, how did they give it an address? Because this is like an abandoned cave. Yeah. Like, I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's a weird non sequitur. I never thought about it before, to be honest. I just assumed that the food had been sitting there since the night before.
Ew. Well, enjoy your ptomaine poisoning, all you vampires. Okay. So anyway, David hands Michael a container of rice, but as he begins to eat it...
How are those maggots? Maggots, Michael. You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
Leave him alone.
Pretty sad.
But then Michael looks at the rice and it is turned back into rice. And since the only thing better than a bit done once is a bit done twice, David hands over a container of noodles, but then it's worms, but then it's noodles. And Michael does not know what to make of this sorcery. Then Kiefer David asks for the wine. And Marco and his doll hair mullet retrieve a bedazzled bottle of grape juice. David takes a swig and then tells Michael to do the same to, quote, become one of us. Star tells him that he doesn't have to drink it because it's, wait for it, blood! It's blood. And I gotta say, I am starting to suspect that this group of young toughs might be vampires.
No.
I think so. But Michael ignores her and takes a big swig, and then the guys and one child all chant, Michael, and dance around in slow motion while Cry Little Sister plays over the scene. And honestly, it's pretty freaking awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the way that Michael drinks from the bottle, and then his mouth sort of hangs open, and he shuts his eyes, and then his tongue comes out a little bit. So hilarious. Oh, my daughter and I had a good laugh about that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good grape juice. It's clearly not wine. It's like see-through and like pink.
Yeah. But
anyway, he's one of them now. A vampire! To the accessory store! All right, next they're out on like on a train track bridge. Is there a better name for this?
A train trestle. Like a...
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, yes. I was trying to think of it and I was like, I don't even know how to Google that for it to come up with that word. Okay, so in the night fog, they're out on this trestle. Michael wants to know what's going on, and then one by one, the gang guys jump down and hang from the beams under the bridge, and Michael follows suit because he's stupid. Mm-hmm. This looks terrifying. Mm-hmm. Under the bridge, you can't even see the ground below because it's obscured by fog. I have no upper body or hand strength. I would be dead in 30 seconds. There's no way. There's no way.
Yeah. This is the ultimate peer pressure situation. And my palms always get a little sweaty when I watch the scene because it's done really well. Because you think, mm-hmm. I would never give in to those taunts. But then you can totally imagine being Michael climbing down there and then just you're hanging there thinking, what the actual crap did I just do?
Yeah, because it's like on the one hand, you would think, well, this is stupid. I'm just going to go home. But then you're like, oh, but these gang guys clearly run the town mm-hmm. and they're like accepting me. Yeah. So I guess I'll do this.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. A train passes overhead, shaking the bridge. And then one by one, the guys let go and descend into the fog below. David tells Michael to let go because, quote, you're one of us. Michael does. And then he falls for like 16 minutes. It's so long that at one point he takes a break from screaming and then resumes screaming. Visual is that he's falling and screaming and then he just stops and like looks around and kind of gets tired and then is like
he's like ah! Wait, what now, what's happening, what are we doing?
But then he lands on his bed. Was it all a dream? He's also putting his filthy sneakers all over his pillow, and it is stressing me out.
Thank you. I had this in my notes. I cannot stand shoes on furniture, but this is especially grievous to me.
Oh my gosh. I've been noticing this lately, I think because we're all on like high germ alert.
Yeah.
But how many times in movies and TV shows, teens or people, whatever, will lie like stomach down on their bed with their head facing the foot and their feet on their pillow?
Always.
And I'm just like, dude, no.
I know. Shoes on, like anything upholstered, freaks me out. And yeah, mm-hmm. especially on beds.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam comes over saying that his mom is on the phone and that it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He opens the blinds asking Mike if he's freebasing.
It's 80s.
I know. Michael asks for his sunglasses because the sun, it is too bright.
Yeah. Michael hungover with his sunglasses on, giving the middle finger to Sam is like a mood and a half. I cannot wait to get that.
Ooh, we should put that on a t-shirt.
Ooh.
Just that still.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lucy says that she's going out with Max tonight and asked Michael to hang out with Sam since he's always out all night. And like from what we've seen, this he's only been out late last night.
Yeah.
But sure. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That night, it's very windy outside, denoting spookiness. Grandpa's off to deliver a very cute taxidermy dog to some widow down the road. It's really cute. Just then, a bunch of motorcycles and headlights and wind show up outside. It is super loud, shaking everything in the house. But when Michael opens the door to look outside, there's nothing there. So then, while Sam is upstairs in the bath, Michael gets stomach pains and doubles over, dropping a carton of milk all over the floor. And next, we see Michael creeping upstairs very menacingly towards the bathroom where Sam is singing in the bathtub. Michael opens the door looking crazed, and the family dog, who is a beautiful Alaskan Malamute named Nanook, I want to cuddle this dog, growls and jumps onto Michael, attacking him. Sam, who was underwater for this encounter, comes downstairs looking for Michael. He finds him sweaty and panting in the dark with a bitten and bloody hand, and then they have this exchange.
What'd you do to my dog, you asshole?
Nothing. I didn't hurt him. He bit me. This is my blood.
Why'd he bite you, Mike? Huh? What would you do to him?
He was protecting you.
Look at your reflection in the mirror. You're a creature of the night, Michael. Just like out of a comic book. You're a vampire, Michael. My own brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Oh, you wait till Mom finds out, buddy.
Sam, you wait. Sam!
Stay back.
Just
stay
wait back. And let me talk. Wait a minute.
So he's transparent when they look at his reflection. But again, like in Teen Witch, this is a pretty cavalier reaction to finding out that your brother is a vampire. Like, Sam reacts like he found out his brother gambled away their grocery money. He's like, wait till Mom finds out.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Also, shit-sucking vampires would be so much worse than blood-sucking vampires.
I know. That's a whole other kind of monster.
Uh-huh. More frightening, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Sam runs upstairs to lock himself in his room where he takes out the comic book, and he does call the number on the back.
You did the right thing by calling us. Does your brother sleep a lot?
Yeah, all day.
Does the sunlight freak him out?
He wears sunglasses in the house.
Bad breath.
Yeah, his fingernails are all a bit longer. He always had bad breath, though.
He's a vampire, all right.
And, like, honestly, that's a pretty weak checklist.
Yeah.
Like, that could also describe, like, a drug addict or someone who spent the night out drinking or just, like, a filthy teenager.
Yeah.
They suggest that Sam drive a stake into Michael's heart, but he can't do it because it's his brother. Obviously, like he's going to be like,
yeah.
Oh, just kill him. Okay, cool. Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
Next, we see Michael waking up to his face being smashed against the ceiling because he realizes he's levitating. He struggles to fly around his bedroom, knocking over lamps and like clawing at window treatments. And it's supposed to be scary and dramatic, but it is hilarious. Lucy calls from her date with Max to check in, and while she's on the phone with Sam, who is telling her that Michael is a vampire, Michael has picked up the other phone extension and is using it to tether himself from, like, flying away out his window. Michael tells his mom that Sam is lying, and just then Sam notices that Michael is floating outside and starts screaming. Lucy hangs up the phone and runs out on her date to go home and check on them. Please, please, someone recut this entire scene to, like, funny, wacky music, because it is ridiculous. And I know this movie is supposed to be a comedy, but, like, do you think this moment was supposed to be funny, or is it supposed to be scary?
Benny Hill music would make this scene hilarious. No, I think this scene actually does a great job of straddling the horror comedy genre. Because Lucy's reaction is such a moment of parental distress and terror. It's like Shelley Duvall in The Shining.
But yeah, yeah.
The flailing, levitating Michael leans more towards like an episode of Mr. Bean. So it's, yeah. I think it's both.
Mr. Bean is a perfect description because it's like very dramatic, scary music. And he's like terrified and sweating. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is horrific. But it's like, he just keeps like flailing around. It's like when Charlie and his grandpa are in the like bubble thing and they can't control their flying. It's like, he's like bumping into walls. And like. Okay, so Michael, who is floating around uncontrollably outside, screams and begs Sam to open the window. He finally does, and he pulls Michael inside. He tells Sam that they have to stick together and not to tell Mom. He also sits this very close to Sam's face. It looks like they're going to kiss. He's, like, grabbing the back of his head. They're very, very close. Lucy has returned home and runs inside frantic. Sam plays it off like he just got scared from reading his comic book, and Lucy is pissed. I mean, rightly so, and marches into the kitchen, picking up the spilled carton of milk. And she picks it up and puts it on the counter. We see that the missing child on it is the child vampire who's been hanging out with the vampire gang. Oh, no. His name is Laddie, apparently.
The laziest character naming ever. I don't know. He's a lad. Call him Laddie.
I don't know. His name's like boy, like small boy. My gosh. Outside, Grandpa returns home while Michael silently sneaks his motorcycle down the road. Inside, Sam asks his mom if he can sleep in his or in her bed with her.
You been eating pizza?
No. Why?
Woo! You smell like garlic.
Oh, and it's because under his robe he's wearing like 8 full bulbs of garlic around his neck? Totally. Nobody would notice that. And he even, like, when he sits down, he goes to take off his robe.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It's, hey, it's so obvious.
Not only the smell, but the bulk and the noise, the rustling.
And the rope with 8 bulbs of garlic around your neck.
Yeah.
That's going to be super comfortable to sleep in.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. All right. Take us home, Shannon.
All right. Well, Max is also returning home from his busted date with Lucy. He unlatches a gate with a beware of dog sign on it. And as he makes the 5-mile journey across a footbridge toward his house, he hears a mysterious noise. At the end of the bridge, he sees his dog, Thorn. So he thinks it was just Thorn making the noise. And as he bends down to pet him, a black kite with a mean face on it dive bombs his head.
Yeah, what?
It's so like thrilling, but then so like, hey, what? So he gets startled. He stands up and he looks around. He sees motorcycle headlights in the dark and hears the roar of the engines. And the wind suddenly becomes gusty and whips up. So we know something's going on. But then just spooky. So then we cut to a panicking Michael rushing into the vampire's lair, yelling for Star. He grabs a lit torch and he starts looking for her.
He also breaks the bedazzled wine bottle, which I find personally offensive because someone spent some serious crafting time gluing all that crap onto it. And then he just chucks it and breaks it. Like, how many of those did the prop designer have to make?
It was elaborate. And, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Well, he finds Star sitting innocently alone on her bed and asks her repeatedly what's happening to him.
What's happening to me, Star?
Michael.
What's happening to me, Star?
Michael. Michael, I can't tell you. I don't
what's happening to him?
I know.
But she cries that she can't tell him. They are overcome by their respective emotions and the attraction that they feel for each other and immediately get naked and have sex. But actually, it's a little more arty than that. We have like lots of circling cameras and gauzy effects. At one point, we're flying above the clouds very euphemistically.
Yeah, and in this flying helicopter shot, we also finally see that this lair is in a beach cave on a rocky beach at the bottom of many steps. Further begging the question, how did they get that Chinese food? It's in a cave.
We will never know. Maybe there's still a working kitchen. It was a resort at one point.
It was in containers.
Okay. Well, also, we're flying through the air literally, maybe because suddenly we're seeing things from like the vampire's point of view. And we hear, rather than see, David and his crew return to the lair with whoops and hollers. The noise awakens Michael, who is taking a postcoital nap with Star. But then when he looks out into the lair's common area, it's empty. Then Michael checks on his dog bite wound, but when he removes the bloody bandages, the wound is completely healed. He is mystified. But is he really, though?
I mean, this dummy. You can't figure it out by now.
He levitated. He knows what's going on. He broke the blood bottle. He knows what's happening. Michael returns home and has what the movie supposes to be a vampire-like conversation with his mom. But actually, this is an extremely ordinary teen boy conversation.
Hi. Hey, aren't we friends anymore?
Sure.
Sure. Does that mean, we are, or,
We are.
We are? Well, then let's act like friends. Let's talk. Michael, take off your glasses. Michael, look at me. If there's a girl...
I'm tired, Mom.
We could talk about...
I'm tired.
We could talk about anything you wanted to talk about.
I have more serious things in my mind than girls in school. There's things I'm dealing with that you can...
Things I wouldn't understand.
Basically, every conversation my brother has ever had with my mom. So, just very basic teen boy stuff. Michael goes into the house, and Grandpa ribs him about getting lucky last night. Sam asks Michael if he took care of everything last night, and Michael just walks away.
Corey Haim's shirt in this scene is completely unacceptable. It's just a t-shirt with like the sleeves cut off, but the pattern on it is super bright stick figures. I hate it. See it in the visuals. I hate it.
Back at Max's house in the daylight, Lucy pulls up with Sam and a bottle of wine. She intends to apologize to Max for their broken date, and she walks through the gate and starts for the house. A vicious thorn charges her back down the footbridge and tears her dress as she narrowly escapes. We cut right to Sam talking to the Frog Brothers about Max's hellhound almost killing his mom. Edgar says they've been aware of very serious vampire activity in the town for a long time. Alan says Santa Carla has become a haven for the undead and that Sam should just kill his brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, simple. Sam reads from the Vampire Manual, aka the horror comic that the Frog Brothers gave him earlier, and says if they kill the head vampire, then all half vampires will return to normal. Sam believes Michael is only a half vampire, but he says he doesn't think Michael knows who the head vampire is. Edgar says Sam has to kill Michael, and if he doesn't, the Frog Brothers will. Sam says this whole thing started when his mom went to work for Max at the video store, and then starts piecing things together.
Max never comes in till after it's dark. The dog who chased my mom this morning was his. Here, listen to this. Vampires require a daytime protector, a guardian, to watch over them as they sleep. Fierce dogs, the hounds of hell, are often employed for this purpose.
No shit.
Yeah, well, what happens if my mom is dating the head vampire? You guys can nail him and save Santa Carla. Truth, justice, the American way triumphs. Thanks to you two.
We'll check out Max.
So it's nighttime again, and Michael is suiting up in his leathers to go hang with the vamps.
Oh my gosh. Michael is being so performatively vampire-y. Like, he has his collar flipped up, like when Jim is trying to convince Dwight that he's turning into a vampire on The Office. And he's just kind of, like, loping around. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And on his way out the door, his mother tells him that Max is coming over for dinner and that she'd like the two to meet. Michael's all vampire grouchy and says he has plans. As he opens the door to leave, though, he sees Max standing there in a blazer with flowers. And if What We Do in the Shadows has taught us anything about vampires, it's that they absolutely cannot come into your house unless they are invited.
Well, you're the man of the house, and I'm not coming in until you invite me.
You're invited.
Thanks very much.
Oops.
Oh, no.
Grandpa watches Max enter the house from his taxidermy room and is immediately suspicious AF. Lucy greets Max warmly, and Max apologizes for Thorne's attack and kisses Lucy. Sam appears with the Frog Brothers and introduces them to Lucy and Max, and then basically crashes his mom's dinner date so they can administer a battery of tests to see if Max is the head vampire. Lucy complains that someone at the table has bad breath, and the boys all stare intently at Max, since bad breath is one of the telltale vamp signs, according to the manual. But it turns out that Lucy was just talking about Nanook. And the rest of the tests, no, poor Nanook, give him a break. The rest of the tests go like this. Sam offers a bowl of like 5 diced heads of garlic to Max, but says it's Parmesan. Max sprinkles it over his food liberally and almost chokes on his next bite. The boys are excited about his reaction until they realize that Max is fine, just having a normal human reaction to putting like 4 tablespoons of garlic in his mouth at once.
Ugh.
Fail.
Yeah.
Sam throws a glass of water on Max's lap and asks if it burns, so it must be holy water, but still just a normal human reaction from Max. Fail. Edgar turns off the lights to see if Max will glow in the dark. Fail. Max is a saint and says that he knows what's going on, but that Sam doesn't have to worry. Max isn't going to replace his father or steal his mother. He just wants to be friends. Then he leaves, and the boys think that they just made a major mistake. On his way out, Max tells Lucy they should try it once more. Dinner at his house tomorrow night, he'll cook. Grandpa looks on suspiciously.
Oh my gosh, poor Max getting constantly C-blocked by Lucy's stupid son.
Right? Just
how long would you put up with
this? I know. And just so like long-suffering and sweet about it.
Yeah.
Well. We'll see about that. At the boardwalk that night, Michael finds David and company and asks normally if they know where Star might be. JK, he grabs David by the leather lapels and spits, "Where is she?" in his face. David chuckles and tells him to take it easy. If he ever wants to see Star again, he better go with the vamp gang right now. They motorcycle out to some secluded area where a bonfire kegger is happening. The party attendees are very drunk and about to be vampire prey. David tells Michael to watch. He won't want to miss this. His initiation is over and it's time for him to join the club. The vamps are hanging out in a tree, which sounds funny, but actually looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the light from the bonfire is playing on their hideous faces because now they're all like fully vamped out in their like makeup cosplay. They have the fangs, the contact lenses, the forehead prosthetics, all of it. And it's freaking glorious and I am here for it.
Yeah.
I love it.
They did a really good job.
Yeah.
It looks great.
And that's why I was saying like 3 weeks they did all of the special effects and everything. It seems crazy to me. Were they pulling
like the makeup alone?
Days? Yeah.
I know.
Crazy. Well, Michael is horrified at first, then confused, then curious. David's gang launches out of the tree and like a shot, they're grabbing drunk bros and sinking their teeth in.
Oh, and it's pretty gruesome. Uh-huh. Like, they rip off a dude's scalp like they're opening a can of Pringles. It's gross.
It is. I mean, this is for sure the horror part of horror comedy because it's graphic.
Yeah.
And lots of screaming. And the more Michael watches, the more his vamp tendencies spin out of control. Soon he's wearing the contact lenses, but not the fangs. as he fights his own nature and falls out of the tree. He lays pitifully on the ground as David and the boys loom over him with bloody mouths and spell out his fate.
So, now you know what we are, now you know what you are. You'll never grow old, Michael. And you'll never die. But you must feed.
Kiefer Sutherland's so good in this part. He has like a good, his voice is great for this role. It's like not over the top. And this might also be a good place to mention that the reason that the director wanted to tackle a movie with vampires is because, according to him, vampires are the only monsters that can be sexy. And like, I think the shot of them backlit on this hill is the most potent example of that. Like the way they're all posed and their hair is blowing in the wind and they have like no shirts on under their jackets and their jackets are open. And like, he's right. Like, this Motley Crue version of vampires is so much sexier than like a Twilight vampire.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love that shot that you're talking about too, where they're standing there. It's everything you want it to be. It's scary. It's sexy. It's smoky. It's leathery. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's so good.
They look scary. They look intimidating. They look awesome. It's not like, they don't look cheesy.
Yeah.
I mean, they look 80s cheesy, but they don't look like, oh, geez. Yeah. It's like, I would be terrified if I saw that in real life.
Ugh. At home, Sam wakes to find another taxidermied animal by his bed.
It's an owl.
Yeah. It actually is kind of scary, too, the way that they shoot it. It's like, that. As he's stuffing it in his closet alongside, like, seven other ones that are in there, Michael appears in his room, startling him. Sam asks him to please not kill him because he's basically a good kid. And then he tells Michael he can help him. He just needs to know who the head vampire is. He says he thought it was Max, but he was wrong. And then Star calls to Michael from outside the window and asks to come up, and Michael yells, no! Probably because he now inherently knows vampire rules. He tells Sam to shut the window and lock the door. Too late! Star levitates to the second story and is at the window. Sam yells that she's one of them, and Star tells Michael that she tried to warn him.
No, sorry to interrupt, but bull crap, she tried to warn him. He straight up asked her what was happening, and she repeatedly said, I can't tell you.
Yes, you are correct.
Oh my gosh.
Michael says it was the night in the cave when he drank from the fancy bejeweled bottle that turned him into a vampire, just like David. But Star says he's not like David. He's like her and Laddie.
Meaning, like, he's not a full vampire until he makes his first kill type of thing.
Yeah, and then she tells Michael that David wanted Michael to be her first kill on the night when they instead made sweet half-vampire love. When Michael asks her why she didn't kill him that night, she says she cares about him too much and that she came to warn him it's not too late for him. Then she asks Michael to help her and Laddie. Michael laughs appropriately and turns away, and then Star disappears out the window. So Sam gets the Frog Brothers hookup, and they make a plan to kill David, whom they believe is the head vampire. Grandpa is busy building a spiked fence out of very thick wooden posts when the boys take off in his prized vintage car, heading to David's lair on the bluff.
Rude. They didn't even ask.
I know. And he just kind of looks at him like, all right, whatever.
I know.
Michael is weak in the daylight and says that he doesn't want Sam to go into the lair because if anything happens, Michael won't have the strength to protect him. Sam hits us with these inspirational words.
This time I'll protect you, bud. Even though you're a vampire, you're still my brother.
So sweet. Edgar tells Michael if he vamps out in any way that he'll stake him without even thinking about it. The crew head down into the lair, armed to the teeth, with stakes, holy water, and other anti-vampire accoutrements. Michael tells the Frog Brothers not to touch Star as he tries to rouse her from her day sleep, enough to get her and Laddie out of the cave. While the boys look around for the rest of the vamp crew, Michael first takes Laddie out of the cave and then goes back in for Star. And meanwhile, the boys stumble on the vamp gang's sleeping quarters.
Jesus!
Ah! Ah!
Enough! I thought there was supposed to be coffins.
That's what this cave is. It's one giant coffin. Right now, they're at their most vulnerable.
Easy pickings. Remember, you just have to kill a leader, huh?
We don't know which one the leader is. I guess we'll just have to kill them all.
We'll start with the little one. First come, first staked.
And they stake the Bill and Ted vampire first, which enrages the rest of the vamps.
Ew, and then they get drenched in, like, the brown vampire blood juice that spews out of him.
Yeah, so much of it. It just goes and goes and goes. It's crazy.
I don't know if it's supposed to be blood. It looks disgusting now.
David grabs Sam's leg as he tries to flee the cave, and Sam drags David into the sunlight enough that David's hand catches fire, and a sad tear of pain falls from David's eye as he growls, "Tonight," and then evilly plots to do future evil.
Oh my gosh. Also, Kiefer Sutherland is legit terrifying in this scene. Yeah. The makeup artist did a great job with the prosthetics. Like, if I was one of the Coreys, I would have pissed my pants filming the scene. He's horrifying.
Oh, yeah. And it's like a super ultra close-up, too, when that tear falls out of his eye. And it's so, like, it makes you feel so many things. Because you're like, oh, the poor vampire's hand is on fire. But also, he's a vampire and was about to eat that kid.
Yeah.
Well, the boys run to the car where Michael, Star, and Laddie are all passed out and no help at all with the getaway. And also, the boys are now covered in glitter and blood. So I guess vampires bleed glitter, which is awesome.
I know. So when they came up in the sunlight, I was like, oh, look at you.
They head back to Grandpa's and are carrying Star and Laddie into the house when Grandpa comes at them with this new house rule.
You know the rule about filling up the car with gas when you take it without asking?
No, Grandpa.
Well, now you do.
And they're like on the stairs with these bodies and they're like tired and out of breath.
And carrying two like unconscious people upstairs and he's just like, put gas in the car. It's like, you have no follow-up questions?
Okay, Grandpa. Michael, Star, and Laddie pass back out in the bedroom while Sam and the Frog Brothers head out to come up with a plan B before the sun goes down and the vamps come looking for them. Turns out Sam's plan B is to ambush his mother at her minimum wage job and yell at her about vampires and such. Surprisingly, that doesn't go over very well, so the anti-vampire crew head to the church to fill their canteens with holy water.
More like they burst in and interrupt a baptism in progress. These sweaty faced turds.
I know. There's like full on a whole family in there with a baby. Sam gets his grandpa out of the house by telling him he has a date he forgot about. Then the boys set to barricading every door and window on the first floor with furniture. They also fill the tub with holy water and garlic, and then they fill their squirt guns with said water. So this is going to be great.
Peel the garlic first, though, which
I know.
I was like, I mean, I guess that would still work. Yes. Get the most bang for your buck.
Most
crush
potency.
That garlic up.
The sun sets over Santa Carla Boardwalk and the vampires awaken with vengeance in their hearts. Max and Lucy are having dinner at Max's extremely 80s house. See the visuals.
Oh my gosh.
Seriously, this guy has everything. The neon tube lighting, animal prints. I think there's a jukebox in the background.
Yeah.
Those tiny, thin breadsticks. Okay, maybe those aren't inherently 80s, but it's what I think of when I think of like 80s Italian restaurants.
Yes, for sure.
It's like Max Googled 1980s home decor and then just bought everything that popped up in the search.
His house is so distracting. How could you live in that house? There's just like blinking lights in every corner.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has one of those things that has like, looks like it's raining on glass.
Oh, yeah.
It's, my gosh, there's so much going on
every
in this house.
Every chair around the dining room table is covered in a different fabric. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Yeah.
When Thorne barks and scares Lucy, Max asks her why she's so jumpy. She tells him about Sam's earlier vamp rant. But back at Grandpa's house, the boys are putting camo grease paint on their faces, playing around with a bow and arrow, and completely forgetting they left poor Nanook tied up outside.
Way to repay Nanook for his protective services.
Seriously.
Chuck him out in the yard?
Poor thing. And when the wind changes and Nanook starts barking fearfully, Sam runs outside to unchain the dog and get him in the house. It's one of those very suspense-filled movie moments where the unseen monster is closing in while the hero fumbles around impotently. So, you know, the whole thing, like, will he get back to the safety of the house in time? So Michael runs out to help him, and as they're running back to the house, they both fall for no reason. they just drop like a sack of potatoes. As soon as they get back to the safety of the house, all hell breaks loose. So there is no safety. One of the vamps explodes down the chimney and then swings from a chandelier like an undead Zorro.
I died laughing when this happened because he comes out like Superman. Yeah. Like, he comes out head first. It's not like he drops down and then jumps. He like he swooped down like Superman and then like flies out.
Yes, and everything he shoots explodes. Out like a cannon. Oh, man. The blonde vampire, the least hot one. I don't know what they're... I can't keep their names straight, so I just rank them in order of hotness. He corners the Frog Brothers in the bathroom, but he finds a painful end as Nanook knocks him backwards into the tub of garlicky holy water. One vamp down. Oh, and also blood explodes from all the faucets and pipes in the whole house, so the house is totaled, basically.
Oh my God. I mean, thanks for letting us live here, Grandpa. Your house is effed.
He knew what he was getting into, I think.
Yeah.
Sam's alone with only a floor lamp to defend himself when the cuter brunette vampire grabs him by the face and hauls him up into the air. Somehow, Sam escapes for long enough to find the bow and arrow, draw it back, and release.
Okay, now, Shannon. You're an archer. You're an archerier. How realistic is it for a teenager who has presumably never fired an arrow prior to this moment to not only do so successfully, but then also hit a flying moving target square in the heart?
Not going to happen, Kate.
Okay, thank you.
Though it's hard to gauge the distance between them, because if they're only like 10 feet apart, then it is possible Sam could land the arrow. But if he's across the room at like 30 feet, which is kind of what it seems like, then no, not a chance.
But I mean, I've tried to just fire, like shoot an arrow, like just launch an arrow at no target. Mm. And it's hard just to do that, like just to draw it back and let it go successfully.
Yeah.
And then he even does the thing where he turns it sideways.
Yeah, I know. Like Rambo.
I was like, no. Yeah, I was like, absolutely not. No.
No, definitely not. But he lets the arrow fly on a wing and a prayer, and the vamp does fall to the floor. But as Sam approaches him, he pops back up triumphantly.
You miss, sucker.
Only to be shot with a second arrow, which catapults him into a huge sound system that I definitely never notice until this scene, which leads us to this very famous Corey Haim line.
Death by stereo.
So 80s. And also this vampire's head pops like a grape. So two vamps down. Next comes a great scene where Michael basically fights an invisible David. Because David has vampire skills, he can appear and disappear and move around without being seen. And Michael keeps getting surprise hit in the face. And it's kind of funny.
Totally. Also, Michael suddenly has eyeliner on, like, for this fight scene, I guess. Yeah. I mean, he looks hot, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, I would date all these guys, even the least hot.
Even the blonde.
Even the blonde.
I was going to fight you on that and say that Alex Winter is the least attractive, but then I went and looked back at him, and he's, like, androgynously beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, you could slap his face on a Renaissance painting of like a woodland nymph and it would completely fit. I was like, oh, I stand corrected. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, they're all very cute. Meanwhile, upstairs, a very intense baby vampire, Laddie, explodes out of a mattress. There's like stuffing and streamers flying. It's very weird.
It's so dramatic.
The Frog Brothers want to kill him, but Star stands in front of Laddie and says, he's just a little boy. Technically, he's only half a little boy and half a killing machine, so I'm on the frog side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael and David are still having their lover's quarrel downstairs.
Stop fighting me, Michael. I don't want to kill you. Join us. Never. It's too late. My blood is in your veins. So is mine.
Good.
It is.
They crouching tiger hidden dragon it around as only vampires can until Michael finally gets the upper hand and impales David on some antelope horns. Michael's mix of emotions here is great. He looks like he's wrestling with being a murderer while grieving the loss of youth immortal, and he's fully vamped out in the face now.
Yeah.
Then Star runs in shrieking and kind of ruins this moment. He pulls her into a dark corner and tells her not to let the boys see him in vamp mode. Three vamps down. But Michael killed the head vampire, so why has he not regained his humanity? Uh-oh. David wasn't the head vampire?
Oh, no!
Oh, no! At that moment, Lucy and Max arrive at the trashed house with bodies strewn about. Max sees David's corpse and looks stricken. In the wake of this carnage, he comes clean to Lucy.
I'm sorry, Lucy. This is all my fault. David and my boys misbehaved. I told you, boys need a mother.
Max, what are you talking about?
I knew it. You're the head vampire.
Sam, don't start this again.
You're the secret that David was protecting.
Who's this?
Well, you passed the test.
Don't ever invite a vampire into your house, you silly boy. It renders you powerless.
Did you know that?
Of course. Everyone knows that.
Has everyone gone crazy here? What's the matter with all of you?
It was you I was after all along, Lucy.
What?
I knew that if I could get Sam and Michael into the family, there's no way you could say no.
Where's Michael?
It was all going to be so perfect, Lucy. Just like one big happy family. Your boys. And my boys.
Great. The blood-sucking Brady Bunch.
And I still want you, Lucy. I haven't changed my mind about that.
I didn't invite you this time, Max.
Burn. Michael and Max start to have a vampire fight to the death, which seems a little unfair because Max is like 30 times stronger than Michael and easily subdues him.
Yeah, he just like grabs him and chucks him up into the rafters, like, ah!
And he's just like, he's just out unconscious. Then Max puts Sam into a vampy headlock and basically blackmails Lucy into letting him make her his vampire bride. And just as he's about to sink his teeth into Lucy's neck, he crashes his Jeep full of those pointy fence timbers into the house, and the giant stakes go flying off the Jeep. One of them catches Max square in the chest. Max shoots across the room and then explodes in a huge fireball up the chimney this time. Yeah. Michael is changed back from a vampire, and Star weeps that it's finally over. Grandpa climbs down from his Jeep, walks through the wreckage of his home into the blood-soaked kitchen, opens the fridge, and pulls out a beer.
One thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach. All the damn vampires.
So he knew all along? Oh, Grandpa.
Fun! So you willingly let your beloved daughter date a vampire. Like, and didn't warn your family to be on the lookout for vampires when they came to town?
Nope.
And instead of arming them with knowledge, you just told them, like, not to touch your double stuffed Oreos? Cool! Thanks, Grandpa. You know what? I'm glad your house got soaked in blood and glitter. This ending is freaking infuriating.
Yeah. And okay, real quick. It only just occurred to me this time, probably because for the first time ever, I'm watching this movie with a critical eye instead of just an entertainment one. Mm-hmm. Since it's clear that Grandpa knows all about the vampires, remember back to the beginning of the movie when he was playing dead on the porch when Lucy first arrived? Mm-hmm. Okay. I've always thought that seemed like such a bizarre idea. I just chalked it up to Grandpa being like a grade A weirdo. But now
yeah,
I
like
wonder,
he's quirky.
Yeah, quirky, like weird, like playing a practical joke. But now I wonder if he heard Michael's motorcycle approaching and thought it was vampires. And so he faked being dead to like survive a possible vampire attack. I don't know. Does that feel off base to you?
I mean, they arrived in the daytime.
Yeah.
So if he knows anything about vampires, maybe, like, maybe he did that. But if he did, wouldn't that have been the optimal time to tell his family about the local vampire problem instead of just letting them, like, wander through the situation blindly?
Yeah.
His freaking grandson almost died.
Yep.
Like, his grandson almost died. But he kept it to himself just so that he could, like, come in with this real zinger at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I sure am sick of these vampires. Like, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, freeze frame. Like, no, I hate this. F grandpa. This is like, and then especially when we go back to the first clip, I think it was the first clip that I played where he was, they were like, is this really the murder capital?
Yeah.
And he was just like, well, all I can say is if all these corpses got up, blah, blah, blah. Again, optimal time to be like, yeah, it is because there's a bunch of vampires here. Be on the lookout for that.
Right. You might not want to go out at night. Just saying. Don't drink anything out of a suspiciously fancy bottle.
Steer clear of Chinese food. Like, this is, and the fact, okay, because I forgot that that's how it ended. So he says that line, like, I'm sure I'm getting sick of these vampires, and then roll credits.
Yep.
And I was just like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. We're all just going to accept that this is happening.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he thought that they had to go through this trial by fire on their own. It makes them stronger. Maybe he knew that they would kill the head vampire.
And maybe, but like, heads up.
Yeah.
Heads up, especially when like Max walked in and he looked at him all suspiciously like, I bet he's a vampire.
Yep.
It's his daughter.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, go on dates with him. I don't care.
Just let him have dinner
other things to do.
Three times.
Yeah. I hate this. Okay. Well, that's it for this week. Join us next week because you asked for it. You've waited for it. We've received more requests for this movie than any other from our listeners. It's Heathers.
Oh.
Heathers. Finally. You can find it streaming on Hulu and Amazon, and it's rentable pretty much everywhere. So, yeah, if you want to watch it ahead of next week when we talk about it, you can do that and follow along with us. If not, we will talk about it in great detail. Yeah, like literally the top requested movie from our listeners. So,
yeah.
All right, join us for that next week. We will talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Join us each week for a new episode of So 5 Minutes Ago. Check out our Instagram at So 5 Minutes Ago Pod with the number 5 to see visuals and clips from the show. You can also get in touch with us at so5minutesagopod@gmail.com. And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Special thanks to Dave Quiggle for creating our podcast music. Talk to you all next week.
Please, so 5 minutes ago.